to the Minivate Gang podcast, episode 102. This is Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
Phil Wilson.
Morning, all.
And Julio Heide Zapata.
Hello.
And we have no idea where Graham Thickens is, other than he was probably out very late last night partying. You know how he goes to those mashes or noshes or whatever they're various clubs.
Yeah,
that's what I was talking about.
Yeah, right.
Match up or a nosh.
All right, I have no idea what they're talking about.
Snacks.
There we go.
Right, he could be a member of a gourmet society for all we know.
Yeah. Well, I'm not hip like Julio, right? Julio, you go out every night.
I wish. No.
No.
No, yeah. I'm a homebody. I like to stay home.
Yeah. Well, you got that little guy, so you got to take care of him.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So, how was your holiday week? Well, there's not a lot going on in the tech world other than mergers and acquisitions and Google potentially buying Groupon for $5+ billion.
Yeah, what's the deal with that?
I don't know. They got to get in the game, probably.
So, has anyone here actually bought anything on Groupon or the other guys? Really? Okay, because I haven't. I'm on their list.
I haven't.
I haven't seen anything that's just made me go, "Oh wow, I've got to do this."
No, we have. We have as a family, we've done several Groupons.
You've done Groupons as a group.
We have. Yeah.
Very
a group
nice.
Of Groupons.
A group of Groupons. Is that a group I?
Well, I'll give you one example. They had. My wife and daughter love Nordstrom Rack at the Mall of America.
And who doesn't, right?
Who doesn't? Exactly. Exactly.
Well, I don't, but. Oh.
All right. Well, so they had a $50 gift certificate that you could buy for $25.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a good deal.
And so.
If you like that store, if you're like me and you know, that's not a big deal. If it was the Apple store, I'd be all over that.
Exactly.
Well, good luck with that. Good luck with that. We're counting on you.
Yeah, I don't think Apple's going to do Groupons. Especially if Google buys them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What, Google buys Apple or Google buys
Apple? No, Google buys Groupon.
Yeah.
Let me ask early in the show.
Let me ask you this question, guys. Is there a chance that because everybody's jumping on the Groupon, the coupon concept here, is there a chance they're going to burn this out? I was having a discussion with a local media guy here just the other day. And he really felt like, by 2012, the whole Groupon concept will be so burned out for retailers, they won't want to do it anymore.
No, I don't. A lot of Groupon imitators Groupon clones are popping up all over the world. So it's definitely kind of a trendy thing. I'm not sure how much staying power it has, but it's certainly an interesting concept. It's almost a foreign language to me because they told Allison Kaplan our recently departed shopping writer. I was on her radio show a couple of weeks ago, and she was asking me, "So, what are the deals and the sales that he run across?" And it's like, Allison, I'm just not a shopper. I don't shop. I don't do that.
Yeah, it's because you get all the free stuff sent to you.
No, my wife's a shopper. She's the one.
You just sit. You hang in the tech lair.
I hang in the tech lair.
All right, Julio, I'm going to bet you're one of these guys that goes out twice a year and buys like 9 things at a time. All right, I need those 9 pair of pants over there, and I need 15 of those sweaters. And
this chair,
done.
And this ashtray, and this paddleball game.
Well, when my wife drags me to the Mall of America, I say, I immediately, activate my usual strategy, which, okay, dear, you go do whatever you want to do, and I'll just hang out in the Apple store.
Yeah, exactly.
Have you been to the new Microsoft store, Julio?
I have actually been there several times. I've been sort of hanging out and sort of getting a feel of the place. And it's growing on me. When they initially opened the Microsoft store, it was very loud. They had the music cranked up. And I was saying to myself, there's no way I'm going to spend more than 5 minutes at a time in this place. They toned that down a little bit. And I really do like the Microsoft store. It's very different from the Apple store is very, very subdued, very minimalist, very elegant, very Apple-like. Microsoft is a lot more in your face. It has these high-tech computer panels, lining every wall. Very interesting, very Minority Report-like. They can do almost anything. Like there's a section of this big panel where people can play Xbox games on. it's a very high tech, very visual, you know, very impactful kind of environment. And so what happens is I'm at the Microsoft store and I sort of get used to it. Then I walk across to the Apple store and it seems almost drab, almost Soviet like. But then I and I go back across to the Microsoft store and I feel overwhelmed immediately.
So have you bought anything at the Microsoft store?
I have not. I actually may buy something very soon. They have a nice computer backpack there that I have my eye on. But I think the Microsoft retail experiment has come under a lot of criticism. It's a blatant ripoff of the Apple retail concept. That's definitely, you know, a Me Too kind of an effort. But I'll tell you, I was there last weekend, just kind of on a scouting expedition to see, you know, how it was doing. And it was every bit as jam-packed as the Apple store.
Yeah, we were there last weekend as well, and the first time I'd been in the store. And what was surprising to me is that even though they had the place filled with various, you know, computers and phones and Kindles at one point, and of course their Xbox stuff, it didn't seem like there was a lot of stuff for sale. You know, like when you go to the Apple store, you've got all the, you know, you've got iPhones and you've got iPods and MacBooks and all that kind of stuff. And it seems like there's just more products there.
That's the thing that I mean, I look at that, you know, I've been at the Apple store and at the Microsoft store. I see people walking out with stuff from the Apple store. I don't see people walking out with stuff from the Microsoft store.
Yeah, maybe that's not the point.
It's a little hard to get a sense of that. Like the LA Times did an experiment. They went to a mall, had a reporter, you know, sit in a chair where he could see both stores and sort of count how many people were coming out with purchases. But he did it for like half an hour, and it was very unscientific. And so it's very difficult to know how they're doing sales-wise because they're obviously not going to tell you. But I almost think that's not the point. I think the point of the Microsoft store is to sort of increase the visibility of Microsoft technology. And they're doing it at the right time because they're bringing stuff to market that is very good. The Windows Phone 7 handsets are pretty good. The Xbox Kinect is very popular, you know, very interesting, very advanced. They have Windows 7 now, which is much better than Vista. So they're doing it at the right time. And it's the same reason Apple open source. They just want to put their stuff out there in a way that they can fully control.
Yep.
They're not at the mercy of Best Buy or Target or whatever. And I think they're doing a good job. I think they're making the right moves. I'm kind of an Apple guy, and I didn't want to like the Microsoft store. I was predisposed to dislike it, and I like it. And having the Apple store and the Microsoft store right next to each other has sort of created this little tech paradise that I can hang out in. I go there a lot because it's just kind of fun to hang out there.
All right. Now is the Amazon store right next door.
No,
the Lego
no.
store is opening just down the way. So my son is going to be in, because my son is Apple. He loves Apple technology. He loves Xbox, and he's Mr. Lego. And so he's going to be in heaven.
There you go. All right. So here's just a yes or no around the horn. Start with you, Phil. Will there be a Google store?
Well, there is one.
I don't know. I don't see a need for one because Google's basically all about online.
Yes or no?
Well, there is a Google store.
Okay. Where?
At the Googleplex. But
okay.
But when I visited Google, they had a Google store, but it was for employees and guests only. But they recently opened a very large, very flashy retail store on the campus. I don't know if that is a precursor to other experiments elsewhere in the country, but they have one similar to an Apple company store that Apple has on the Cupertino campus.
Well, I could actually see a Google store at some point, though, because they've got so many Android devices, you know? So they could do what Microsoft is doing and sell, you know, phones and tablets and e-readers and all sorts of stuff.
Well,
running Android.
Well, and it's also what I've been amazed by is how many people don't know anything about Google Apps. That you know, you can get the standard edition for free, and you can have up to 50 users, and the buzz is starting to build in the nonprofit sector, a little bit in the small business sector, but Julio, you transferred everything over to Google Apps, and it's not that tough. And yes, you're a techie, but I would think a Google store, it would be great to be able to really understand all the stuff you can do, because I think their Google sites are underused. You know, they have a lot of different products and services that they offer that people are not necessarily taking advantage of.
Yeah, I beat the drum on Google Apps quite a bit because I don't think people know as much about it as they should. I've been a Google Apps user. My personal domain is associated with the Google Apps account, and I love it. Yeah.
Great. Well, so Verizon 4G. You know, Graham and I went to the rollout. I think you probably went to it as well, Julio. But you've been experiencing some of the devices, right?
Well, there's just the one device. There's an LG laptop plug-in modem that's okay. available right now. There's another modem that's coming very soon. Right at this exact point in time, there's just one device. There are no MiFis. There are no there's no LTE built into phones. You know, all of that is yet to come. It's just a laptop modem and only Windows, no Mac.
Right. And so how does it
compare with with Clear and the other guys that are doing this kind of thing?
I've used T-Mobile HSPA Plus. They've deployed that here. I use one of their modems. I've used a variety of WiMAX devices. There's one network that has three brands associated with it. There's the Clear service, which is sort of consumer focused. Then there's a Sprint brand, and that's aimed at business road warrior types. And Comcast is using the same network, and it's offering its own devices. And I currently have a Comcast laptop modem that sort of piggybacks on the same WiMAX network that Clear and Sprint are using. And I've had very, very good results with that. And I've lately sort of been doing a smackdown between WiMAX and Verizon LTE. And Verizon claims that their WiMAX competitor is a lot slower than they are. My results don't bear that out. I'm seeing results where the local WiMAX network, the speeds on the local WiMAX network are approaching those of the LTE. LTE is still faster, but I think based on my results, at least, people that go either WiMAX locally or LTE locally are going to get pretty decent speeds.
Well, that article, I put the link in our shared doc about the PC Mag guy, or maybe it's a woman, Sasha Sagan, that wrote the article about Verizon's 4G LTE network is so fast that you can use up your entire 5 gig monthly allotment in 32 minutes. Did you experience that? I mean, were you downloading a lot? I mean, were you going and watching videos and all of that? And because obviously the speeds are there.
The speeds are definitely there. I never go below 10 megabits.
Wow.
It's very, very fast. In fact, I disconnected Ethernet from my work computer and substituted the modem, and I've been using that as my main internet. And I don't know, I can hardly tell the difference. And the speeds are so fast and so reliable. Yeah, that I believe it. I think it's pretty easy to burn through your allotment. And the Verizon software that you install is very in your face about telling you what your how much you used up. I think okay. Verizon knows what you're saying. You know what the point of that article.
Yep.
And so it's being very proactive about letting you know how much data you've used.
So are they going to have a plan that's more than 5 gigs?
There's two plans. There's a 5 gig plan and a 10 gig plan. And I think if I recall correctly, $10 per gig for an overage.
Wow.
So it can get pricey in a hurry. So people have asked me, is this a viable alternative for home broadband? And my response is, I don't think so. I don't think in terms of pricing, it's structured that way. And mm-hmm. I point people over to Clear, because Clear with the WiMAX, Clear is specifically marketing their service to consumers, to home users. They're creating devices where you set up a WiMAX modem in your home, much as you would with a Comcast modem or a DSL modem. And you use that for your home internet. And it's, I can't tell you for sure whether they'll do any throttling or whatever, but they claim it's an all you can eat proposition. So that, in terms of how the pricing is structured, that is a little more realistic in terms of a Comcast, you know, a DSL or a cable modem alternative. The way the Verizon thing is set up with LTE is it's not that kind of an option. It's more of a road warrior option where your usage is a little more sporadic.
Well, I noticed that this last billing cycle with Comcast, who has a 250 gig cap, my daughter moved back home and brought, you know, all her digital downloading goodness, because she only watches streaming video off Netflix and so forth. And we were at 136 gigs for the last billing cycle, and she was only here a week. And so for all the stuff we're doing, I'm sure this month we'll be up to around 200 gigs. And so, you know, a Clearer is going to have some issues with streaming TV, and whether the network can even handle it, let alone I just couldn't see how you could use a 4G network for a home use.
Well, it sounds like technically it's comparable to DSL, so it's usable, but these caps make it not practical, because you'll blow past it, and then you'll get into your $10 a gig land where you're going to get this astronomical bill.
Well, Clear claims to not have a cap. They claim to be all you can eat. Whether they're lying or telling a half truth, I don't know. But that they're, at least on the face of it, that is more appropriate as a DSL alternative. But the Verizon is absolutely not.
Yeah.
Well, do you think we're headed in that direction though, Julio? That there will be both terrestrial and over the air sorts of internet services that will be competing head to head?
I don't know if a wireless broadband will displace wired broadband. I don't know, you know, whether that is actually going to come to pass, but I do believe that the wireless broadband is going to be a direct equivalent to the wired kind. We're definitely heading in the direction where we're just going to have a bandwidth blanket. I read a science fiction novel recently that is set, you know, about 20 years into the future, and they described how people don't even think about it. They're just walking around their metro areas, and the broadband is just there. I mean, it's not something that people even worry about or think about, because it's just there. It's just a fact of life. And I think we're definitely headed in that direction, and we're just getting to the point where the technology is fast enough and reliable enough, to make, you know, broadband stuff possible. The blurring of the wired and the wireless is starting to occur, and you know, back to Clear is the most intriguing example of this, because until now, you know, high speed wireless data was primarily a business proposition, primarily a business tool. Now it's starting to be offered as for home users as a Comcast or Quest alternative. That's very, very interesting, and it sort of points to a very intriguing future where there's going to be hopefully a lot more choice, because it sort of frees up, you know, offering a wired broadband is expensive, and the companies responsible for this have not done a very good job of upgrading their networks and sort of taking us into putting our country into a position similar to that of other countries like South Korea. And hopefully the wireless angle will give, you know, these companies less excuses to, you know, offer the kind of speeds we should have.
Yeah. Well, the one thing that I come back to though is, in the same reason, I'll just draw an analogy to the fact that I always encourage anyone who's on the Minivate Gang podcast to connect their device or their laptop with Ethernet instead of going over Wi-Fi, because there's packet collisions and other things, and you end up with dropout. And it's a throughput issue. When you plug that wire in, you've got significantly greater throughput. And what I'll come back to is what's happened with talks that I've been to, and even had this conversation with the Verizon 4G tech guy at their rollout here recently, that, you know, it does come down to throughput, because one of the things that the wireless companies can do is, and you probably notice this if, of course, you're never using your mobile device in a car. I know that of all you guys. But if you've ever been in a vehicle at rush hour where there's a lot of people doing voice and you're trying to do data, you'll notice that the latency and the lag time on going to sites or doing anything data-wise seems to be compromised. And it's compromised because they're rolling the channels to voice more than data, and I know it's the same, but they give priority at different times to different data types, and so I'm wondering if that's going to be a big issue with some of this wireless stuff, if people will see, oh yeah, we got the speeds, but the throughput isn't there, and so therefore the experience isn't that great. What do you think,
Jim? It's possible, although, and again. You can't always believe what these companies are telling you, but I was listening again on the press conference announcing the timetable for deploying Verizon LTE, and the Verizon CTO was very adamant about how he says that this is a from the ground up brand new network that is designed for data. He's obviously tooting his own horn, but he's basically saying, this is brand new technology built with specifically what you're saying, Steve, in mind. So we'll see. But, you know, we're entering a future where some of these bottlenecks are going to become a thing of the past.
Boy, I sure hope so. Because I'm with you. I mean, it's going to be ubiquitous, and we're going to be walking around with everything. Everybody's going to have some kind of device, some kind of a smartphone type device. And I even saw an article about the 7 UI experts that were hired to take the BlackBerry into the future from a UI standpoint. So, you know, it's everybody's moving in the same direction from that perspective.
It's kind of mind-blowing to be sitting on the bus, you know, on my bus commute, sitting on the bus, pull out a phone, open my YouTube account, and then just start playing some of those high definition videos.
Yeah,
and they're pristine. You know, in the past, they would be very choppy and blocky, and they just play perfectly. It seems like a simple little thing, but it really blows your mind.
Yep. Well, speaking of devices, somebody pinged us on the Minovate contact page, pointing us to an article by justjudyjudyjudy.com about a white iPhone 4 spotted in Minneapolis. She actually had pictures of the guy with the white iPhone. And I know this is not big news, but, you know, you heard about that kid. Okay, all right.
I'm surprised that Comrade Jobs actually let one out of Cupertino.
Well, you never know. Remember that kid that was buying the parts?
Jobs. Well, picking up on Julio's Soviet.
Picking up Julio's Soviet sort of feel.
Description of the Apple feel, Apple store.
No? I don't know. But you know what? What if there's, there's supposed to be 6 new Android phones that'll be ready for 4G in the first quarter. And the rumor of the iPhone on 4G on Verizon. Verizon could be in a really, really fine position going forward.
Well, but, 4G has sort of become synonymous for faster 3G technology. So, what T-Mobile's doing, which is really not technically 4G, and the WiMAX and LTE are technically also not really 4G either.
Yeah, exactly.
But both of those technologies have a lot more improvement to make than T-Mobile you know, their kind of last, I guess it's 3.5G technology, but it's all being marketed as 4G. Do we see that as somewhat confusing?
Very, very much so. The word 4G is being thrown around willy-nilly, very carelessly, in a very marketing sort of way, and to the point where 4G, the acronym 4G is almost becoming meaningless. It's just marketing speak at this point. There's a technical definition for 4G, and I don't think any of these carriers are meeting it, and I don't think any average person is aware that there is a technical definition for 4G. And we're almost going to get to the point where it doesn't really mean anything. You have to look at each service. What are your device choices? What are your speeds? What's your pricing structure? You know, what's the best service for me? And just kind of ignore the 4G speak, because I'm starting to roll my eyes at this point. It just doesn't mean anything. Yeah.
Well, do you think that when we get to true 4G, and this will be, I guess, in a few more years out, but when we get there, when we roam around the world, we'll all be using the same kind of technology? Or will it be like it is now, where, you know, if you have a CDMA phone, you're sort of out of luck out of the US, but if you have a GSM phone, you can sort of make that work as you roam, assuming your handset's unlocked?
That's a good question. Right now, you know, GSM is the global standard, and sitting here, I can't tell you what the next global standard is likely to be, or if anybody really knows. But I do know there are going to be devices that are increasingly nimble and flexible that will be able to do, you know, several kinds of connectivity. And those devices are definitely coming, so that you can be a little more flexible and adaptable in terms of where you get your bandwidth. So hopefully between people agreeing, okay, this is what we're going to do around the world, and devices that can do several different kinds of connectivity, you know, hopefully that will sort of lick the problem.
So I'm sorry, I didn't follow up with Julio there. So who's using their 4G?
Well, I don't have 4G, so that makes it easy for me. I'm using my 3G all the time, though.
It doesn't roll out till December 5th, right, Julio?
Yeah, correct.
Using the Sprint 4G, it's still very choppy for me wherever I go. And I still haven't, on my Evo, haven't turned the 4G on permanently, simply because it's a battery suck if it's constantly looking
for
4G.
Okay.
So, and it's not solid enough in Lakeville, where I am, to be on constantly. Now, I don't know, even if it's on constantly, that will reduce the amount of battery suckage. But, you know, when it's searching for it, it takes a toll on my battery life.
Well, there's a Nokia technology that they are touting, that one of the things that smartphones do is they'll go out and they'll make a request, and they'll get back the beginning of the request, and then they'll drop. And then they have to handshake again with the tower, and that constant ack-knack, you know, pinging the tower all the time is what burns up battery life. Or if the app is set for essentially running as a process constantly. And so there's all these tricks that are being done to try to speed that up and take the load off of both the towers, both the wireless service and the phones. And Nokia is touting this technology, and they've been clearly doing PR on it, I'm sure, because they want to sell it to all the wireless providers. But there will be schemes like that I'm sure will help with battery life going forward.
Well, we need to get some sort of battery technology that will also help at the same time, because that's the biggest problem right now.
Well, it is, but also it's not just the technology, it's the cost. I have that Newton rechargeable lawnmower, and I have, they're lead acid batteries. Yeah, or excuse me, no, they are nickel metal hydride, big car batteries. And they have a linear downtrend in the energy. Lithium ions maintain their energy, and all of a sudden they just drop off a cliff. So you have a much better sustained energy output. The kicker is a lithium ion battery. The nickel metal hydrides are $99. A lithium ion would be several hundred, I've been told, and it's sort of borne out by some of my research. So I'm not going to pay for one battery more than I paid for the lawnmower. You know.
So how's the handwriting recognition on that Newton lawnmower?
cute.
Was it as good as the
Newton itself?
Actual yeah. Newton handheld. Yeah.
NEUTON is how it's spelled. Yeah.
Ah.
So, hey, by the way, just so people know, in the next couple of months, ReliaCloud, Visi's hosted service, they're going to be making some pretty major changes. I had a very nice conversation for about an hour with Jason Baker, the CTO at Visi, that runs and owns ReliaCloud, and they're obviously looking at it, what everybody else is doing in the space, Rackspace and Amazon Web Services and all of that. And I'm really looking forward to being able to have a local, really strong option for lack of a better term, small to mid-size business development and hosting for apps.
Would they be willing to host WikiLeaks?
You know, you could certainly ask Jason. I'm going to guess the answer is no.
I think they're looking for a home. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're not looking for a server farm in the U.S., though.
Yeah, probably not.
No, I would guess not.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Okay, so, I opened up the door. What did you guys think of the concept of WikiLeaks being thrown off the Amazon server?
Well, it's their terms of service, so.
I actually struck a passionate chord.
Well,
if you violate the terms of service and then you get kicked out, it's like, okay, that's somewhat to be expected. I would think that if I ran WikiLeaks, I would probably be working with a similar hosting provider that does Pirate Bay or something like that, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
A little shadier, but, harder to close down than Amazon.
And they just had to change their domain name, didn't they?
I don't know the answer to that.
I think that just happened. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because the domain name was locked up with Amazon or they wanted to point it to something quickly. So.
No, it's kind of an interesting point because, the domain name registration services can be shut down on .com domains in .org and .net, I believe, because there is a connection with the U.S. government. Where if you have other domain name, other top level domains like .info comes to mind as one.
.xxx, that would work too.
Right. So all of those are not connected with the U.S. government. So you'll see a lot of these types of sites that will be changing from .org, .com, .net to .info and other top level domain spaces because of that, because the government can actually, block or pull back their domains.
And their WikiLeaks .ch, right? I don't know what CH is. Do you know what CH is?
That's Switzerland.
Oh, okay.
You guys probably didn't hear this, but I'm looking at an article right now.
You are.
I'll put the link in the show notes that this is a WikiLeaks related story that all social media experts are actually the same person, WikiLeaks documents reveal.
True.
It's actually kind of humorous, so I'll put that in the show notes. But I always thought that was the case.
Betcha.
So now are all
social media gurus the same?
Yes, absolutely. Okay, same person.
So gurus and experts, there's no difference.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
That's if you're a dog on the internet, they can't tell you're a dog. So
right. Right.
Gotcha. Hey, listen, I was at the launch of Drivetrain last night, Dan Grigsby's latest project.
Oh, I couldn't make it, but
it was a very nice gathering it's Pizza Luce, right? Is it Lucy?
No, it's Luce.
Pizza Luce. He did a very nice, non-perishable food item. So we gave to the food bank and had a couple of drinks and talked about what Drivetrain is up to. It's social and mobile apps development, and they're doing a soup to nuts sort of thing as an agency, doing consultation and development and actually getting those apps out there. So always good to see what Dan's up to. He does a lot of different things. So, and also ran into Joseph Reuter, who has got so many things going. It's just amazing.
Oh,
he was telling me about some of them. I mean, obviously you've got Curation Station Extender, which I guess is in line for a new facelift sometime in 2011. And he's got some other things cooking. Something as basic even as some text messaging projects, which we'll be able to talk about, I think, a little bit later on when he's got them more fully fleshed out and farther down the beta trail. So he was a busy man. He really just said to me, you just got to build it. You just got to put them out there. And, what our startup community needs is basically people building stuff and getting it out there and go from there.
So, yeah.
And I think he's doing his fair share. That's for sure.
Well, you know what? I'd like to bring in a guy right now. And Julio, I don't know if you've met this guy, Johnny Benson.
Yeah, we have not. I don't think we've met in person, but we've communicated quite a bit online.
Have you? Okay. Phil, why don't you tell everybody about Johnny?
Johnny is a Flash developer or a Flash artist here in the Twin Cities
and
area.
And illustrator,
an incredible illustrator. In fact,
did Minovate's logo.
He did the Minovate logo for us, and he's done a great deal of things. He helped me out with Comic Twit and just an incredibly talented guy. But also, I met Johnny at a podcamp. He's one of the early podcasters and has his own podcast called Mostly Trivial. And we're excited to say that Mostly Trivial is celebrating 5 years and its 200th episode.
Wow.
Johnny's going to join us here. So let's get Johnny on and chat with him.
Let's get him on. Yeah, if you haven't listened to the show, it's a hoot. And the guy's sound effects capability is incredible.
The production elements are phenomenal.
Yep.
So.
All right. So, Mr. Right. Johnny Benson, how you doing? Steve Borsch here.
Hey, fellas.
What's going on, dude?
Is that the Tim Elliott?
Indeed, it is. It's been a while.
Yeah, man. I think about you once in a while. I'm at a wine tasting, and I haven't talked in a long time.
Yeah, give me a ring when you go to those wine tastings.
Yeah, okay, yeah, good. We'll hook up again and get reacquainted.
And booze it up, yeah.
And booze it up, yeah, yeah.
And you got it, yeah, for sure. How do I sound? Am I my mic too close to my face?
No, or? You sound wonderful.
You sound fantastic.
Tell us about this big milestone.
Sound effects, though.
Yeah, I know I can't degenerate. Maybe I can have Robot Boy call in and he could pop in some sounds.
Tell us about your big milestone.
Wait a second. I want to introduce him. Julio Ojeda Zapata's on as well.
Oh, Julio, I didn't see you there. Hey, man, Johnny B here.
How are you?
Very good. Very good. We exchanged email a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, very cool. So what's that? What's going on? You guys, are we recording? What's happening?
Yes, we are live.
We're recording.
So JB, tell us about the big milestone. Tell us a little bit about Mostly Trivial and then the milestone.
Yeah. It's one of the few podcasts that made it to the 5-year mark. And I was happy to reach that and also hit show 200. So that feels like some kind of a milestone, I would think.
What is the topic for 200?
The topic was kitty cats, feline facts on kitty cats.
Very nice.
I had a friend of mine a long time ago was a hairstylist who's turned into kind of a TV actress and a pet psychic. And I hooked up with her on Facebook and started talking to her and asked her if she would do an intro, because I always like people to do intros for the show that have some kind of an interest, an interesting background. And so she wrote a lot of the material and provided the intro, and she's going to be on a reality show with David Hasselhoff. So I thought, well, that'd be kind of cool to cross-reference, you know?
Oh, how fun. Where'd you get the picture of the cat? I'll put a link in the show notes to your site, but the cat doing
wasn't that
the
great? Well, you know, just cat images in Google, you know, and I just went through them and there was something.
You could be there for hundreds of years doing that, JB.
Right.
I know. It is fun.
So, you mentioned you're one of the few podcasts that made it to the 5-year mark. Why do you suppose many podcasts don't make it that long?
Oh, probably, you know, it's a fad. You know, people lose interest. They even had a term for it when people were falling by the wayside. And I can't remember it, but like,
pod fading.
Pod fading. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You lose interest. And, you know, it's hard to have subject matter. I mean, people just have a show just to talk about stuff. Sometimes you kind of run out of things to talk about. Unfortunately, I have a subject matter that I think could go on forever.
So just out of curiosity, because for those who haven't yet listened to Mostly Trivial, you do that's number one. but you do a really layered show with your sound effects and so on. How long does it take?
He goes ape shit with the production. He just goes ape shit.
Well, how long does it take to produce
that? That's what I was going to ask. Yeah,
an 8-minute to 10-minute show takes about 4 hours from writing. Yeah. You know, collecting the trivia, and then recording my voice, and then producing it at the end, you know, with Robot Boy and all the sound effects. It's about 4, sometimes 5 hours, depending on how much research I put into it.
Don't you have a soundboard though, so most of the effects can be done live? Or do you cut all the effects in later?
Oh, later, yeah. I put them all in nice and tight. You know, I have like 5 layers of sound effects and music, so I get them in. You know, I place them. I use Logic Express, you know, by Apple, and it's a really nice layered look to see all your tracks. So I can just move them and, you know, nudge them in real tight so I can make everything sound just right so there's no delay.
Johnny, I should just point out that you are now a lifetime guest of the show because you mentioned the word Apple in a sentence. So,
hey!
Oh, Phil, so,
Steve and Tim, or Steve and Graham, if Graham were here, would be. And now Julio is just very excited about that.
Yeah, now if he had
Julio's
mentioned...
How much in hardware investment do you think you've made? You know, speaking of Apple, I mean, what has it taken in terms of expense and infrastructure to sort of get your, because obviously to get a podcast to be professional and to sound professional, I mean, you have to start to invest in gear. How much do you think you've spent to do that?
That's a good question. Yeah, I use Logic Express, which is like $200, and I got a mic that's about $100, a Marshall XLR, and I have a mixer that I use that takes the XLR mic and puts it into the laptop. So I do everything on a Mac 17-inch laptop, and I use an M Audio mixer that just takes in the mic. You know, so maybe under $500 probably.
It's really easy to get into podcasting. We did it, so anybody can do it.
Right? Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Tim, are you on a Mac? No, you're a PC guy.
I'm on a Mac, yeah.
And you were going to say something, too? You kind of talked at the same time with Julio. No? Okay.
Yeah, I forgot what I was going to say.
Short-term memory loss problems on this end.
Yeah, so. And I turned 50, so that's a problem.
Oh, I know. It's amazing.
It's a bummer. It's a bummer, yeah.
You said you don't run out of subject matter, but what sort of keeps you excited and interested in sort of continuing the effort?
That's a good question. Yeah. Also, you know, I'm a trivia junkie. You know, I play the NTN games when I go to like a sports bar. Do you ever see those monitors that play a trivia multiple choice game?
Yep. Right. Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah.
They give you that little box, you know, and then you punch in what you think the answer is. I'm pretty good at it. And my wife and I are Jeopardy fans, too. So we TiVo Jeopardy. Fast forward to the commercials, you get through it in 17 minutes.
That's like trivia porn, isn't it?
It is. It's great. And we actually pause to guess the answer. You know, we actually play the game. We'll go, oh, who is that guy? We'll pause and we'll, you know, so it keeps our minds stimulated. You know, trivia is very stimulating, I think. You know, people say it's trivial, which is negative, but it's also, I've learned a lot of stuff over the years. So it's kind of like staying in school and always learning something new and being a trivia buff. So I think it's kind of, you know, in my blood.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Well, but also it'll stave off Alzheimer's. So,
yeah, exactly.
You're planning for the future,
and it's more interesting than Sudoku is.
Yes. Oh God, my wife plays Sudoku. I can't do it. It's too. The numbers boggle me.
Yeah,
my wife loves it too. Same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm not a numbers guy. Well, I would think Tim would be into it. Kind of. You seem to kind of be a.
No, I don't like numbers either.
No. Yeah, that's why I had an accountant for a long time. I just saw a gray sheet of just numbers on there. I went, here.
I actually love this. Numbers when there's like a 9 and several zeros in my bank account.
Oh, we like that.
Makes me happy.
Have you seen that?
That's good. Yeah.
Because, dude, if that's true.
My net worth is now over $1,000.
Sweet.
Yeah. Wow. That's great.
We're quickly getting to six figures.
Okay, so the next Mostly Trivial is going to be about what, JB?
That's a great question. You know, I don't know. I have a little trivia book that I write down notes, you know. Like I watch the History Channel, Modern Marvels. That's a really cool show for, you know, just learning about lumber or how they make popcorn. And so I'll write that down like, oh, that's cool, how they make ice, you know. So right now I have a few things on my list, but I don't have it in front of me. But, oh, here it is. Let's see. What sounds good? Maybe you guys can help me pick on my next one. I've got Soupy Sales.
Oh, love Soupy Sales.
Pez Candy. Roller Coasters. The Capitol Records building in Hollywood that looks like a stack of records. You ever seen that one?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And I found a link on color photography that was produced in like 1910. They actually did images in color in Europe, and it was fascinating. I thought that would be a really interesting subject matter.
Well, I'm voting Pez.
Pez Candy?
I'm voting Pez.
Pez Candy.
Anyone else?
I would have to vote for Soupy Sales only because it just, you know, probably 90% of the people that listen to your show would have no idea who he was, but just go to Wikipedia and type in Soupy Sales.
Hey, didn't he die recently?
Yeah, he did. Unfortunately, last year. Yes. Yeah.
I remember him. Yeah,
unfortunate pie incident, I believe.
Yeah, it stuck.
Phil.
And he asphyxiated.
A pie incident?
Is that on the check box? You know, he would have appreciated that, I'm sure.
Exactly. Yeah. See, now those that know Soupy Sales know that he's the trademark pie in the face guy. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's cool. Yeah, all right, well, I'll take your votes down. Anyone else that got a favorite on that one?
Julio, come on. What are you in, buddy?
Well, you got to do some Star Trek or sci-fi.
Oh, listen to you.
Something trivial.
There you go. There you go.
Star Trek? That's good. I'll put that down here.
Ooh,
you haven't done Star Trek in 200 episodes?
Can you believe it? Well, I'm not a big Trekkie. I'm a science fiction fan. I'm a Star Wars kind of guy, you know, so but you know,
you were
classic.
Yeah, you were dead to me. No, sorry. Bye.
You're dead to me. Oh. You gotta,
hey, Johnny, you gotta stick in Battlestar Galactica then.
Too. Oh geez.
Yes. With
maybe
Warren
maybe
Green.
It's a question on Star Trek, a question on Star Wars, and a question on Battlestar Galactica or something like that.
There you go.
Get a little Lauren Green trivia going. That's what you need.
How about some Neil Gaiman trivia?
Ooh. Oh, I don't know who that is.
He's a local science fiction fantasy writer, very well known.
Very good. So I've only been here.
Do you not know who Neil Gaiman is?
No, sorry.
Wow. Okay.
No one else? Who else knows who that guy is?
I do.
I'll see.
I'm a nerd. Yeah,
but Steve knows everything. So
Julio, right. Julio,
but he's local. You know,
Julio knows that one, right? You must know him.
Neil Gaiman. Yeah, actually, my son and I went to video. You would actually like this because. It's a show called Video Games Live, and it's basically a concert series that plays famous music from video games, and there's lots of trivia built into it. So my son and I went to one of these performances, and lo and behold, Neil Gaiman was like directly, you know, the row in front of me.
Really?
I was too bashful to approach him, but you know, other people were like coming up and shaking his hand. It was a big moment.
Huh.
That's great.
Yeah.
You know, I always have a hard time approaching people. I mean, I was sitting across the aisle from B.B. King, and he had his big diamond Lucille guitar pin or pendant on his jacket. And the woman next to me, we're talking, and all of a sudden she says, "Excuse me a second." And she stands up and goes over, "Oh my God, Mr. King. Oh my God, can I have your autograph? I just, you know, blah, 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 blah." And I just thought, I would never do that. I couldn't bring myself to just go and interrupt somebody and act like a fanboy.
A long time ago when I was flying home from St. John's University to Puerto Rico for college break, I happened to be on the same plane with Rita Moreno.
Yeah.
And when we were like in the baggage claim area, I walked up to Rita Moreno. So I'm a big fan, really, really, really excited to share a flight with you. And she was like, she made this face where like her privacy screen had been breached, and you know, she was rolling her eyes.
Oh, really?
And it was a very unpleasant and uncomfortable experience. And since then, I have never, if I see a celebrity, I don't approach celebrities anymore. I just don't do it.
Yeah.
I want to know how you had West Side Story music loaded up.
I'm just
going
to say that she was it. Oh, you heard it. That.
Good.
Indeed.
I should have kept going then.
So what was her name?
Rita Moreno in West Side Story? Oh. Oof.
But what character did she play? This is a mostly trivial
thing.
There you go. I should know that. I have to look at Robot Boy. Has to look up everything.
Come on, Johnny B. You're disappointing Robot everyone.
Who was it, Tim? What was her name?
It was Maria, wasn't it?
No, it was not Maria. No. She was not Maria. Who was Maria in the movie?
Wow. Oh, Natalie Wood.
Natalie Wood, yes.
Oh, right.
You're right. You know what? I don't know what her character
Rita
was.
Rita Moreno was in a supporting role then. So.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
Yeah. See, huh? There you go. Anyway.
There you go.
I remember her name. In Santa Monica at a store. Well, 10 years ago, she was in there shopping, talking to this store manager, and I recognized her from, you know, TV and all, but I'd go up to her and say hi anything, because we were just kind of very casual, you know, it wasn't a big deal. I don't have a problem walking up to people that are famous. I always kind of like, you know, if you just treat them like a person, not like, maybe don't say you're a big fan, or, you know, say, you know, like, just come on, like, hey, I like music too, or I'm into art and film, you know, so they don't know who you are. And you think they know who you are because we know them, but we are strangers to them, you know, and they can act very standoffish sometimes.
Well, I was at the airport, and here comes Weird Al Yankovic, and it was at the point in time when my son was about 11 and was just a gigantic Weird Al fan, and he's racing to a gate, and I go, hey, Weird Al, and he goes, hey, and I walk up, and I shake his hand. I go, can I get a quick snap with you? And he goes, look, I'm late. I go, just a sec, and I hold up my iPhone and took a picture of me next to Weird Al, and told him, I said, my son worships you, you know, blah, 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 blah. I remember emailing it to my son, and he was like showing it around school and so on. It was hysterical. He had to be there, I guess. But anyway.
Oh, Robot Boy just handed this to me. In 1961, Moreno landed the role of Anita in West Side Story.
There you go.
Anita. Wow. Okay.
There you go. Thanks, Robot Boy.
Excellent. Well, listen, JB, good luck with 201 and beyond. We'll keep listening to Mostly Trivial, and we probably ought to wrap up for the week. Anything coming up this week that we should be aware of, guys?
In terms of local events, the answer is yes. On December 4th, co-working for startups is happening at Third Place in Minneapolis. I'll put a link in the show notes. And then on December 9th, the Minnesota High Tech Association is having their annual CIO panel. At 7:30 to 9:30 in the morning, and a bunch of CIOs are going to be there, and it'd be interesting to be there and listen to what they're saying about cloud computing and you know, where things are shifting and how they're shifting, what they're doing, whether they're hosting things externally, whether they're buying servers, whether they're you know, looking at Google Apps for their business. IDC, just real quickly, IDC did an article, I'll put this link to in the show notes, that IT spending is going to shift from hardware to software dramatically in 2011. Mm-hmm. And so it appears as though the enterprise is going to the cloud in a big way.
Well, there you go.
So should be interesting.
And then also coming up on the 15th of December, MEMA is having their annual holiday party. So
That's right.
That's what we've got right now. Anybody else got anything?
Well, we'd be remiss without mentioning that Julio's book's coming out in, what, a week or two, Julio?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure, but I think the ebook is going to be generated in the next week or so, and then the physical copies of the book are imminent, you know, in the next couple of weeks.
Tell people what the name of the book is. Yep.
Yeah, what is it?
It's a business book. It's called iPad Means Business, and it essentially explores the, you know, the productivity and business implications of the iPad, Apple's iPad.
Sounds good.
And where can
Phil
people
and I
find
are
out
not
more
profiled in it for sure?
No,
no,
Graham's in there, and Mr. Borsch is in there.
Yeah, because we don't have iPads.
Yeah, we don't have iPads. We're not cool like those guys.
Slumming down here south of the river.
You can touch mine, neither. Tim. Yeah. You can touch mine if you want.
And you should have me on the show to talk about the book, definitely before you actually see the book and read about what I wrote about Graham and Steve, because then the whole deal would be off.
All right. You're dead to them now, right?
Well, thank you very much for listening to another Minivate Gang podcast. We'll be back again next week. So have a great week,
guys. Have a good one. Hey, take care, guys.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.